Did I say I told you so? No, I didn't. I fought the urge. I don't like that type of question. It's almost as bad as yes or no.
Hey, Weekly Pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin sports writer of the year, Jason Moldy. I'm ESPN Wisconsin's Alex Stroph, ahead of Packers-Vikings. Only the second divisional matchup of the season so far for Green Bay. Comes at Lambeau Field Sunday at noon after the Packers defeat the New York Giants last week. Now 6-3-1, second place of the NFC North. This is a fascinating season, and I'm excited to talk about it with Jason Wilde. How you doing, Jason?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Appreciate you asking. So I say it's an interesting season because it feels every week when we talk, we're kind of like, yeah, I'm not really sure what the Packers are yet. I don't really know what their identity is. They're inconsistent, but sometimes they're good, and sometimes they look sloppy. And it kind of feels that way about the NFC North as a whole, right? First place Chicago, second place Green Bay, third place Detroit, fourth place Minnesota as we enter Week 12. But also it just kind of feels that way about most of the NFL. I don't really know what to make of this team. I don't really know what to make of that team. I said this to you a few weeks ago, but it feels like the parity in the league is really, really high this year, and that includes the two teams we'll see at Lambeau Field on Sunday.
Well, I don't know about the last part of that very long soliloquy, but everything else I agree with. I would say that there's a lot of flawed football teams. I mean, Kansas City is flawed. Buffalo is flawed.
Yeah.
Baltimore's flawed. The Lions are flawed. The Eagles are flawed. And yes, the Packers are flawed. The Bears seem to be perfect to me. I think they've really got it in there. First in the division. Bear down.
I believe they haven't beaten a team with a winning record.
Hey, you can only play who's on your schedule.
Well done.
Yeah, I'm trying to be nicer to teams that I'm not in any way affiliated with. So I've got my Bayport hat on. One of my good buddies, Kelly Fitzgerald, gave me this. He's a teacher at Bayport. They're obviously playing for the state championship. So even though I'm a Jaguar, I'm a Pirate for today. Look, the Packers are going to be this way all season long. And your hope, being the Packers fan that you are, is that when the rubber hits the road in the playoffs, they have positioned themselves that they're playing their best and they have a road that is conducive to them going to an NFC championship game, going to a Super Bowl. I personally do not think they are a Super Bowl team. I've been clear on that. If I am wrong, I will happily fly to Santa Clara and cover that Super Bowl week, and it'll be exhausting and awesome all at the same time. But I think they have shown more flaws than some other teams have. I know they have a better record technically than the Lions. I think a week from today as we're recording this, I'm not saying it's the whole season, but you beat them in Detroit on Thanksgiving and you have a head-to-head tiebreaker, so you can finish. Like, I understand they've got a tie, so it doesn't really matter, but still, you have the head-to-head tiebreaker on them. You never know what's going to happen. You feel really good about your chances then, right? So we'll see how it plays out, but yeah, I think you nailed it. Like, they're all flawed to varying degrees, and who's going to get their blank figured out in time to make a run into the postseason and beyond?
Yeah, I did a segment on Mr. Irrelevant on Wednesday's episode of the five things that concern me most long-term about the Packers, or not long-term, but I guess in the short-term, for the remainder of the season. And I don't necessarily want to rehash that list, but just talk about some of the things that were on that list. And high on that list for me was some of the injury-related things, right? So pass catchers, offensive line who can't either stay healthy, but also just I don't know if that's a very good group this year. I don't want to make excuses because, I mean, you can only do what you have, right? You can only deal with what you have. But without Jaden Reed most of the season, without Tucker Kraft most of the season, I guess I can understand a bit more than maybe we've given them slack why they've struggled the way they have offensively, despite some of the maybe boneheaded play calls and some of the lack of scheme and et cetera. But those two injuries are really important, and I feel like we've let at least one of those kind of fly under the radar in Jaden Reed, who the Packers are hoping to get back here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. I was literally saying that to Jen and Gabe when my phone call was disconnected this morning. Like I have been as guilty of that as anyone. I thought, okay, look, I am a big Jaden Reed guy. Like, I do think, I understand he was quiet down the stretch last year, but I think he's the guy that they should keep out of all of those guys, first and foremost, over Dobbs, over Wicks. Obviously, Watson got the one-year extension. I'm curious, when I look at the big picture, how soon will he be back? Like, he posted that picture, and I was like, okay, boom, tomorrow, story on Jaden Reed opening the window. Well, it turns out that the Pella window is still slammed shut for now. And if you didn't open it yesterday, then you're probably not opening it until after the Lions game, right? So probably, you know, they'll have the mini bye after the Thanksgiving game. They'll probably come back Monday and practice. I would assume that maybe that's when they would open the window. And then does that mean he's able to play against the Bears? I don't know. They missed two games with Watson once the window opened that he didn't play in. So, you know, again, I think he's really valuable. I think he could be extremely important down the stretch. And then I think they have to get Golden healthy because, you know, he is a different type player. So I'm eager to see what they do with him. But I think there's a chance they could get their offense really humming. And if they do that with the defense playing the way it is, I'm curious to see what they can do.
Yeah, I was really impressed by Jordan Love on Sunday against New York. I thought he played a spectacular second half after coming back from the shoulder injury, which I thought of you, by the way, when he went to the locker room with that shoulder injury, because you of all people have really gotten on him about not sliding when he runs with the football.
Yep.
Have you talked to him about that this week at all?
I did. I'm supposed to talk to him today about something, another risky behavior that he engages in, but one that I actually like. And that is taking some chances with the football from time to time.
Like that, yeah.
But yeah, you know, like he thinks I worry too much.
Yeah.
Did I say I told you so? No, I didn't. I fought the urge. But again, like, it's like LaFleur said, like, it's not like he doesn't know, right? But my point to him, and when I told him this story, you know, it's not as good as the time I told him the story about Favre showing up on family night and flying in that day and him thinking that Favre landed a helicopter on the field at Lambeau Field and got out. I said, no. He flew in on an airplane to Austin Straubel. And then there were like TV cameras following him driving from the airport to the stadium. But, you know, I told him the story of Rodgers in 2010. How in Detroit he takes off on a run and it's a big gain and then he gets concussed and he's not able to play against New England. And only by the grace of the football gods does DeSean Jackson have a big play and that loss to New England, even though Matt Flynn played really well in that game, doesn't hurt the Packers. They still win their next two. They get in the playoff. They beat the Giants and the Bears to get into the playoffs. And they win their three road playoff games and they win a Super Bowl. But Rodgers getting that concussion could have taken a team that ended up winning the Super Bowl and kept them out of the playoffs.
Right.
And it was a huge lesson for Aaron that, look, I have to be smarter. I cannot. And that was what, for lack of a better term, pounded it into his head. And, you know, Jordan, I'm not sure that Jordan missing seven snaps with a shoulder injury to his non-throwing shoulder necessarily taught him any sort of lesson.
Yeah, a couple of things from that. Jordan after the game going, yeah, it's sore, but whatever. Yeah. It's football. And then Matt LaFleur, I think it was you that asked him the question maybe Tuesday or Monday about what happened on that play. And I thought Matt's defense of Jordan was very entertaining. He's like, it's so fast out there, and he pump faked, and he got the guy to jump, but the guy didn't jump actually as high as Jordan maybe thought he did, so he ended up hurting him. I just thought that the breakdown of what happened on that play was entertaining. But I think collectively as Packers fans, we all kind of held our breath. And then Jordan's in the locker room. In goes Josh Jacobs to the locker room. And you're going, well, what the hell's going on out there? Vince Lombardi style at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Luckily, Love comes back. Jacobs does not, who we'll get to in a moment. But Love plays an excellent second half and leads what was technically a fourth quarter comeback for Green Bay to win 27-20. Josh DiMaggio said something earlier this week, and I'm sure you've heard many people say this thought. I think it's interesting. I don't know that I agree with it. But Josh Jacobs getting hurt was good for Matt LaFleur in the way he called the offense in that game. He wasn't super committed to the run like he has been all season. I appreciated seeing the way he put the ball in Jordan Love's hands and said, hey, go win this thing. What do you make of that thought? What do you make of how the play calling changed after Jacobs left Sunday's win?
I'm not here to disparage Josh DiMaggio. I think he and our friend Gabe Neitzel are largely misguided. That, I mean, the offense runs the way the offense runs, right? Like, if you and the Giants gave them looks that were conducive to being more aggressive throwing the football. Matt LaFleur and by extension Jordan Love are not going to run pass plays if the can is obvious to a run. And so the idea that Josh Jacobs' absence, you know, changed everything for them, I don't subscribe to that theory. You know, look, Emmanuel Wilson finished the day with 11 carries. Okay, of those, 4 came in the first half. So he had 7 second half rushes. Now, I don't know how many possessions they ultimately ended up having in the second half, because my God, those were endless drives that the Giants had. So I can't get on board with that. I understand that they both feel strongly about that. I just am not a believer in that. The Packers essentially had 4 possessions, including one where they had the ball for 26 seconds where they're running out the clock at the end. So they really only had 3 possessions. They ran 16 plays in the second half before that slide. On the third down before the punts. I mean, I don't think we can look at it and say, oh, they really loosened up Jordan to let him go win the game. I'm not on board with that.
Yeah, but 16 plays and 3 drives, touchdown, punt, touchdown. 3 of those plays were a 3 and out. The other 2 was a 6 and a 7 play touchdown drive, one in the third, yep. One in the fourth quarter. Right smack dab in the middle of that, you have a 16 play drive by New York and a 15 play drive by New York.
Correct.
So it shows you how quick they were getting down the field and how efficient Jordan Love was, which I think is impressive for what Love was able to do Sunday after coming out of the locker room with a shoulder injury. I really thought he was spectacular on Sunday. I assume you thought he was at least good. Why are you shaking your head? Did you not think he was good?
No, I thought he was definitely good. It's this whole Jacobs theory. You know, Gabe was promoting it before the game, and then when Jacobs went to the locker room, I was like, where is the voodoo doll that he was stabbing Jacobs in the knee on?
But hold on, just I guess in their defense, I don't think it's an anti-Josh Jacobs theory. I think it's an anti-Matt LaFleur theory. I think it's more so you're treating it like a year ago where you're using the run to open the pass, and clearly that hasn't worked this year, where you take Josh Jacobs out of the equation, because obviously he's ridiculously talented and they're a better football team when he's on the field. I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that.
Oh, I don't think those guys agree with your statement there. I don't think he thinks they're a better football team when he's on the field. I don't think they think that, because I think they feel like they're out of shotgun too much. They run the ball too frequently. They don't run enough outside or inside zone stuff. They run duo blocking schemes. I don't think those guys believe that they're a better football team when he's on the field. Again, I'm not here to speak about them. You can delve further into that on Mr. Irrelevant. Have Gabe on as a guest. I thought Jordan was really, really good. I mean, he completed 13 passes, but he had 5 passes dropped.
Dropped, right.
Like, now, again, you know, everyone celebrated the Savion Williams play. It's third down. So if if the risk level there, that's one of the things I want to talk to him about. But like I keep, and this is the one that I want to bring up to him. The game in Pittsburgh where he throws that pass to Kraft and then afterwards says, yeah, I had no idea where it was going. I was just hoping nothing bad would happen.
Yeah.
Like after Rodgers, I think he's an amalgamation of both Rodgers and Favre and of his own style of play with his, fadeaway jump shot passes. But, and look, I was never, ever, ever, ever on board with the crowd that was like, well, Rodgers doesn't take enough chances. That's why we don't win.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. But if you have a defense that's as good as this group is, and if they start taking the ball away, then it's even better. If you have a defense like that, there's an opportunity for you to, hey, take a chance. And I always bring this up with Reggie and Leroy Butler telling Favre, hey, keep slinging it. If you make a mistake, don't worry about it. We'll get the ball back for you. And they did. So that's what this defense, if they could – I mean, the fact that they have 8 turnovers is ridiculous. Like, I think there's only 3 other teams with fewer, including the Jets with 1. So I look at them and I see a quarterback who is starting to really get it. He still is not there. Everyone who is, I mean, we've crowned him a couple times. The Toyota-thon thing is swell, but let's see what he does here, because this is a potential season and maybe even career defining stretch here for him to say where he's at and to announce, for people like Tausch who put money on the idea that he's going to be the NFL MVP, this is an opportunity for him to show that he can be that guy.
You refer to the final 7 games, but really we could look at the next 3 weeks almost. 3 divisional games in a row, and obviously you mentioned earlier that Detroit game coming up next Thursday, a week from today. It's a huge matchup. For Love, it's obviously a huge matchup for the team and their standing and where they'll ultimately line up in the postseason, hopefully. But if Love is great the next 3 weeks, I think we're talking about him even differently than we are today, despite as good as you and I both think he is. He's still got some stuff to prove. There's no doubt about that. And where he stands in the NFL in terms of the echelon of quarterback he is, or the echelon he's in terms of quarterback. So we'll see. To your point on the turnovers, Jason, I just think it's fascinating. They only have 8, and 2 of those came in the final, 4 minutes against New York?
Yeah.
Now, they were crucial turnovers because it was a 1-score game, but it kind of felt like, okay, is Jameis Winston really gonna beat this Packers defense? And he turns the ball over. Micah Parsons comes up with that. What does Tausch call him? Strap? Strack?
Strack. It's a strack. A thumb.
Strip sack.
A sack. And then strip is in the middle, and then the ack from sack is back in there. Yeah, it's a weird deal.
Okay, got it. Micah Parsons is so good at football. That's my sentence.
Yeah, I mean, what is this, yes or no? I guess I'm not thinking about Micah Parsons.
You're thinking about Rashawn Gary. He is outsnapped by Kingsley Anagbare in New York. Huh?
He's never been a high snap guy, is what I was told this week.
Is it LaFleur said that or Halfley?
LaFleur said that. Halfley talks later today. So I take no joy in getting after guys and saying, oh, he's disappointing. Like, there are people that do this job and that's one of their favorite things, is to really go in on somebody. I just feel like we have constantly made excuses or explain the way, you know, Rashawn Gary's inconsistency. Like, people are killing Luke Musgrave, right?
Yeah.
Is there the same level of criticism for Rashawn Gary? Like, Rashawn Gary, in his defense, had some pretty productive early games. Now,
he did.
The devil's advocate would be, yeah, I really enjoy the sacks where he's not blocked at all, right? Because there are multiple of those that you don't have to be a great quarterback pass rusher in order to make those plays. But, like, again, and I thought that the arrival of Micah Parsons, because remember, they were both drafted the same number of their drafts, 12th overall.
Oh, yeah.
Parsons in 21, Gary in 19. And if Gary had become the Packers' version of Micah Parsons, they don't have to trade for the actual Micah Parsons, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's
and
true.
He didn't. But you go get Micah Parsons, and I thought, okay, here we go. Now he's not going to have the double teams that he got. He's going to have this unbelievable player opposite him. They're going to move Lucas Van Ness inside. It's going to be like, you know, Bubba Smith and Merlin Olsen and the fearsome foursome that I wasn't even born for yet. But instead, you know, he got off to a statistically hot start, and now he's disappeared again. And I just, you know, and I never, it's always strange because he doesn't come in the locker room very much. And I try never to write, you know, like I talked to Malik Heath yesterday and then bumped into him and his dad at Meijer when I was buying a new rake, which was interesting. But like, I'm like, look, man, yeah, like, but like, hey, look, when there's no information out there, people fill in the blanks themselves and they usually assume the worst. And so I wanted to make sure that, at least for my writing work, he got the opportunity to say, hey, and he chose not to take it. You know, he said it wasn't an off the field issue. It wasn't he wasn't late for a meeting or miss a meeting or late for curfew. He claimed it wasn't him complaining about his role, which I don't know what that leaves.
I don't either. I figured it had to be one of those things.
I mean, one of my favorites was when Daytone Jones was smoking weed in the parking lot of Lambeau Field, and they had like the security video from, because Lambeau Field, obviously, there's cameras like everywhere.
Right.
So I have no idea what it was, but again, wanted him the opportunity, right? And then it was funny when he sees me coming. I didn't even see him first at Meijer. But anyway, my point is that when I talked to Rashawn, it feels like there's a disconnect. Like what I think is happening and how he views what's happening is not the same. So I don't even know if that would be productive or not. I'm just saying from a production standpoint, you need more from a guy that you gave a $96 million contract to. And that is not there right now. And again, I feel like everyone loves to get after the coach, but like Goody's the one who drafted him. Goody's the one who paid him. Mm-hmm. Goody's the one who then traded for Micah Parsons because he didn't become him. Goody's the one who drafted Luke Musgrave. Goody's the one who drafted Lucas Van Ness. Goody's the one who put together an offensive line that has not been good enough this year. Goody's the one who drafted Jordan Morgan, who I believe him when he says he thinks he could be a really good left tackle and he's uncomfortable everywhere else.
Right,
but my and
he's got to play.
Right. And my point is not, oh, now I want people to start trashing Goody. That's not what I'm doing here. But like, I do the show with Tausch every day, and he is a big time Goody stan. And I am, and I look like a Goody hater, which I am not. I just want there to be an equitable spread of blame. Like I did an ESPN national show after the Packers lost the Eagles game. Who's most to blame for where the Packers are? I don't like that type of question. It's almost as bad as yes or no, right? But because look, it's not, there's so many reasons why things go well and so many reasons why things go poorly that it's never one thing. And so I just feel like Goody kind of skates by. Mm-hmm. and Like, how much better is their defense with Carrington Valentine on the field instead of Nate Hobbs?
Better.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, Aaron Banks has had some okay moments, but he's had some not very good moments, and then he's been hurt a lot. Right?
I think this is all fair. I like that you're an equal opportunity blamist. Is blamist a word? We're going to use it.
It is now.
It is now. Your point on Rashawn Gary, though, after week three, the loss in Cleveland, I remember talking to you on this program and saying, Rashawn Gary leads the NFL in sacks. He did after 3 weeks. He had 4.5 sacks through the first 3 weeks of the season. He was the first guy to lead the league for the Packers that deep into the season in sacks since Clay Matthews. Like, that's an impressive mark. There has been 7 games since then. He's had 0 sacks in 5 of them. He has not had a sack since the Pittsburgh game on October 26th. He was outsnapped on Sunday by Kingsley Enagbare, who, by all means, is a fine player. But Kingsley Enagbare is not paid to the level of Rashawn Gary to be a great player, which is what Rashawn Gary is paid like. And with the addition of Micah Parsons, you expect Rashawn Gary to wreak some havoc, and he just has not done that consistently. So I hear you on that. That's a concern. The offensive line, obviously a concern, and these are all Goody things. Well, Goody does get credit for some things, right? He gets credit for adding Josh Jacobs. He gets credit for adding Xavier McKinney. He gets credit for adding Micah Parsons.
Grand slam home runs, yes.
He gets credit for drafting Jordan Love when everybody thought he was an idiot for doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe not on that one.
Well, he gets credit for it. Again, I think, and he has turned out to be great, and everyone now looks at it. But again, for the crowd that loves to say, I would take 9 losing seasons if the Packers won a Super Bowl every 10 years. Well, we have no idea. I don't have Doc Brown's time machine, the DeLorean. But is T. Higgins enough that in 2020 they win at home against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I'm not saying he is or isn't. I'm saying that for the crowd that thinks, oh, well, this is great. We got our quarterback. Yeah. And he sat for 3 years and he was ready to hit the ground. All those great things. But I think the people that said, hey, you use that pick on someone who has an impact right away and maybe you win a Super Bowl as opposed to being 15 years without one, I don't think those people should just be poo-pooed and told you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I guess we'll never know, right? I mean,
we never will.
Nope. But what we do know is you have your franchise quarterback for the next hopefully decade plus, and that is what Jordan Love is. All right, we've got like 2 minutes left, and I think the theme of the last couple of weeks when I talked to you, Jason, is I could ask you this question, but I think the answer is I have no idea. So what do you expect Sunday as the Packers finally get back to divisional play for the first time since week 1 and they host Minnesota? What kind of Packers team do you expect to show up Sunday?
I expect them to intercept 3 J.J. McCarthy passes and win in dominant fashion.
Really?
Yeah. And if they don't, obviously the most important thing is that they win. If you're a Packers fan, and we can spend Monday then on Wilde and Tausch going through how unimpressive their win was and how they let J.J. McCarthy hang around in the fourth quarter and have the ball with a chance to go win the game, and then he threw an interception.
Real quick, can I just interrupt you? Is that a testament to you being that unimpressed with J.J. McCarthy, or do you think this is finally when the Packers really start turning it on, or maybe a little bit of both?
Of course, it's never one thing, Alex.
Have I ever talked to you before? Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's both, but I mean, J.J. McCarthy has started 5 games. He has thrown at least 1 interception in all of them.
All 5, though.
He has thrown 2 interceptions in 3 out of the 5. Like, he, you know, in talking to X yesterday, in talking to Keyshawn Nixon, like, they know that this is an opportunity. So get it together, man. So we'll see. But, I've been unimpressed by him. But again, he also put together that game that he had in Detroit, and they won at Detroit. Right. So it's not like he won't be a test at all, and he sure has a hell of a lot of weapons if he can get him the ball and not throw it to the other team.
It's an unpredictable league, and it's an unpredictable team so far in 2025. The 6-3-1 Packers play the 4-5, I believe, Vikings.
4-6.
The 4-6, excuse me, at Lambeau Field at noon on Sunday. The 10 o'clock hour of Green Bay game day is the Jason Wilde hour, and I do know what to expect when yes or no rolls around about 10:30. Jason will not say either of those words when we play yes or no on Green Bay game day, beginning at 9 o'clock on Sunday. Get him on social media at Jason J. Wilde. Get him at channel3000.com, where you can get all your latest Packers news and the Extra Points newsletter. And hear him on Wilde and Tausch each weekday from 9 until noon. Jason, really enjoy this as always. Thanks, buddy.
Noon game at home. Be there before 10 a.m. for your portion of Green Bay game day. Got it. Thank you for the reminder. All right, take care. Be good.
We'll talk to you then. It's Weekly Wilde.